Just a very quick background on myself, so you wonder who the strange man is up the front. I was raised in Iraqi, went to Iraqi primary, Selwyn College. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad. Oh yes, got a Selwyn girl. I joined the police as a 17-year-old, got posted to Glen Innes. Probably as a disciplinary thing at that time. Loved Glen Innes because I kind of grew up with a lot of the people. Played league for Mount Wellington. Eventually went to Rotorua in the police. Come back to Auckland in the 80s as a detective sergeant and worked on fraud squad. Then eventually left the police after about 20 years service. Then became a private investigator and then gave that up and worked for the church, running a Hillsong conference in New Zealand, helping in Australia. And then eventually took up our own ministry, which has morphed into what I'm doing now with Breakfast Club. Breakfast Club started in 2010 with a school in South Auckland, Randwick Park, 800 children. First day, 8 kids turned up for breakfast. No one talked to me, it was all eyebrows. Good morning, thank you, see you later, catch you tomorrow. And they didn't speak for days. And I was thinking, what the heck? You know, and they just eat their Weet-Bix and go. We worked with a social worker there, so we started supplying food to the families and whatever they needed, beds, whatever they needed, we'd find. We started a sports academy at Randwick Park School. We got children on scholarships, sporting scholarships. That's one thing that they were very good at. And we got kids into St. Kenigan's, Auckland Grammar, King's, on $100,000 scholarships. That just showed that doesn't matter what you are and what background you are, whatever your strengths are, we can work on them. So we picked up a good sponsorship from St. Kenigan's, and one of their parents owned Southmore New World. And she sold that and came to Eastridge. And so we started, why don't we do something in Glen Innes? So Glen Innes Primary, principal's strong Christian guy, goes to St. Columba, and the same church I go to. So we started doing something there. It morphed into quite a big ministry to the point where St. Columba found out what we were doing and that I was just a member in row 10, seat 4. And they thought, well, we better make him an elder. So I got an elder's job out of that. So we picked up Glen Taylor, Tamaki, St. Pius. So we've done about $3 million worth of food, appliances and stuff in the 8 years. We started with Christmas banquets, did that for 2 years, up to 600 people turned up. Then we started a Christmas store. And we invite 200 families and 1,000 kids. And we've got Mr. Whippy there making out 1,000 Mr. Whippies. We get cafe to you making ice cafes for the mums. We got watermelon and ice cream and all the things that the people we invite love, and cans of that horrible corned beef that they love. And we get a pallet of that, of palm corned beef, and give that with the frozen veggies and potatoes and onions to make a dish with. So yeah, that's just how we are. We've just gone into something that we never thought we would do. And it's kind of like Jesus when he grabbed those 12 fishermen. Hey guys, yo! And he never told them the truth. He said, just hang out with me. And that's kind of what we do. We just kind of hang out with Jesus. And if he told us what we were doing 8 years ago, I'd be like Forrest Gump. I'd be running away, run, Forrest! You know, but no, we're doing this ministry. We hold it in an open hand. We share what we've got. We've got Hubbard's as a good supporter. We got, like this week alone, we got 4 tonne of rice given to us. So we gave that to different food banks around Auckland. Hubbard's give us pallets of cereal. We give that to different charities. We have a food bank at Glen in the school, but because we're now meeting the needs of the people in the schools, the request for food is really diminishing. So hence we give our food to South Auckland Christian Food Bank and other food banks out there and ministries that are wanting food. So that's just how we are to this day. So what got me onto this topic today, this little girl here, She was part of an Indian tribe in Mexico, in Ensenada. I went there in 2003. My daughter was doing a ministry with the Dream Center in LA. And what they did, they used to invite all these communities for food, and they would queue up along the road. And you get there and you'll see 100 people in a queue. And they look beautiful. They were like these Spanish, all dressed up looking beautiful, these ladies and that. Because they had mana, they had, you know, proud pride in what they were. But that lady would go along there with this paint tin and had a slit in the top and get offerings from all these poor people. And the poor would give to the very poor. So when the Dream Center collected a lot of dimes, and you can imagine if they're feeding 30,000 people a week in LA, how many dimes add up? And we would take money down to this Indian tribe, and this girl here, the clothes that she's wearing, my daughter gave them all those brand new clothes 3 months prior to that, and every day she wore them. And I looked at her and we prayed for them, and the chief of their tribe stood up there and prayed, and he prayed in his dialect, and I didn't understand a word he said, yet I understood every word he said. And that probably got me into where we are today. So when I was thinking about, we had this topic about, as a church at St. Columba, how would we treat marginalised people that came along to church, whether they're all those little things that we talk about, whether we're gay people, all these lists, a long list of people, how would we treat them in our church? And as an eldership, we had a three-month period where we talked about it, had videos on it, and then we would come to a decision on, as an eldership, and you know what we would do. And so the first day, I left there that night going, whoa, you know. And I'm an Araki Presbyterian boy. I grew up in, as a five-year-old, I used to run to church on a Sunday. I was so fired up about hearing these stories. I was a dreamer, and I used to love the stories. And it was the guy that gave us the stories, he was the guy who used to do the grease and oils at the Araki Shell service station. So every day we used to see Mr. Lennon and wave out to him, but I couldn't wait to get to church to hear the new story. And the stories like Woman at the Well, which we heard in the prayer today, you know, the woman that was being stoned, and probably the most one that got me was a prodigal son. And like, I remember, you know, I just imagined the father there, and he had embedded in his hand his little son's handprint. Because when he came back, the father remembered his little son and his love for that little son. And like the older son was, we all know the story, but the older son was saying, you know, what about me and all this sort of stuff. And the father just loved that son. And there was Rob Bell, a preacher in America, put out a series. And in that series, he had a story about his son that was accused of stealing a little ball. And the video series, what's video of that, was called The Lump. And the son denied that he stole this ball. And eventually they found out that the son did steal the ball. And when they put it to the son ran up to his bedroom under the blankets and just stayed under those blankets. And when his father came up to have a word with the son was sweating because it was so hot under the blankets. And he pulled back the blankets and he got hold of his son and he cuddled his son and he said, it doesn't matter, whatever you do, I can't love you any less. Yeah, and that's what got me with the prodigal son. That's what he was saying to his own son. You have gone away, you've come back, and I love you. And Jesus loved us to that extent. And we heard that in the reading from the book today, that it doesn't matter what we do, Jesus couldn't love us any less. So that's what got me thinking when I was driving the next day after being at the elders' meeting, and I called into the Elam bookstore, and I said, I've got to get a CD. There's got to be something on a CD. So I bought the latest Hillsong CD. There is more. And when you get old, you don't listen to the first three tracks of Hillsong CDs because they're loud. So I went, up to track four. But track four is For God So Loved the World. And it's almost a straight word for word out of the Bible. But what a beautiful song. And if you haven't heard it, go on to YouTube and just listen to how they sing that song. And that's what got me and went, wow. And I was sitting there dreaming in my car as I was on the way to Breakfast Club, you know, thinking, you know, if he loved us that much and he gave up his son. So that's clearly what God's love is. So I'm trying to work out what my love would be. And again, being an older person, what would Jesus do was our kind of motto going way back in the day. And I'm only just old. In May I got my gold card, my super gold card. And I've now been on a Fuller Ferry. I went on there last weekend. I went into town, out to Waiheke, back into town, back out to Half Moon Bay, just to say I've been on the ferry. So you know, I'm now old, so I know what would Jesus do? You know, and track five come on. And I was so fired up about track four. Track five is be still and know that I am God. You know, so why am I worried about what I'm going to do with marginalised? That's his problem. You know, and that's what made me start thinking. Then I went back to my school day. And I started thinking, well, I went to Selwyn College. I was taking away this number and adding that number. About 1966, you know. And I remember when we got to Selwyn College from Meraki Primary, the rich kids that were from Glendowie, who were going to Selwyn College, when we started playing football, and in those days, Andy Dalton was the captain of the first 15, they were commenting, how come you're hanging out with all those Maori fellas, to me? And I don't know who he's talking about. And I, what Maori fellas? And he said, those brown fellas in the rugby team. And we never knew that they were Maoris. At Iraqi Primary, no one told us. Now, they're Maoris. The Wongs are the Chinese. You know, we didn't worry. They were just Iraqi. We were all a family. So it wasn't until I got to these rich kids at Selwyn from Glendowie that I started to realise, well, hang on, there's a breakdown. And because most of the first 15 were us guys from Iraqi and the yacht races, yachting guys, they were from St Helier's, you know. And because we didn't know what a yacht was at Iraqi, you know. But, yeah, we just took everyone as they were. And then I started thinking about it. I have this young lady that's up here, and I've taken her face out, so just for her sake. One of the charities that we deliver food to in South Auckland, but I go there three times a week, and I take her cans of tuna, because I can, and she likes tuna. So I take them to her, and I've been doing that for 3 or 4 years now. And I found out about a year ago that she was gay. So I hadn't been there for 2 weeks and she came running up to me to give me a cuddle. And I put it on Facebook and I got a couple of comments from people about, you know, is that the right Christian thing to do to be cuddling young ladies? You know, and I went, oh, two things about this girl. Not only is she gay, she's blind. And you can see, you can't see there, but she's got a white stick. You know, and good thing about her, I kind of jokingly told her I'm 20 odd, so because she doesn't know how old I am. But she comes running up to me every time I'm there and gives me big cuddles, you know, and I start lying. I've given her dog food and told her it's tuna, you know, and she doesn't. So now she doesn't trust me. She goes to someone that can see to say, hey, what's he giving me, you know. So, but I get on hugely with her. And it's the same at our Eastridge, one of the guys on the forklift. When they pointed out, you know, you're very friendly with him. I said, yeah, I just bought KFC for him and the boys. Do you know he's gay? I said, no, but what's that got to do with it? You know, I probably loved them more when I found that, because people said that to me. Why would you trying to put that person down and put this girl down? She wants to come to the Warriors with me and a mate to watch the Warriors play, but she can't see them. But she can see them, you know what I mean, in her sort of way. We thought, oh, that'd be great, you can go and get the chips at half time because you get to the front of the queue with your stick. And I said, she said, Steve, I feel like I want to give you something for what you do to me, this young girl. And I said, do you have one of those disability parks? She said, I'm blind, she says, don't give us those parks. Oh, okay, because I can imagine me hopping out of the car with my stick, okay? And they would think, oh, he's all right, but no. So I started, when my daughter went to the Dream Centre, and was it 03, I think it was. Yeah, I was stunned that they were feeding so many people and their attitude to the people. And I come back, my son then went over in 06, he went to Joyce Meyer's Dream Centre in St. Louis. So I went over there, as a parent does, just to make sure your kids are right. And I really fell in love with Joyce Meyer. I hear these things about, oh, she's rich and all this. Man, she gives away so much money. When Katrina hit, the first thing she did was she rang the Dream Centre, said, I hope your team are down there. Like, not are you going or whatever, I hope you're down there now. And whenever there's something like that in America, the Dream Centre from St. Louis send their men down first. Because Joyce says, they don't need prayer. They need guys to lift all the rubbish out. And then about a week later, they send the prayer warriors down, which just so happened to be these ladies. You know, and wow, the things they do. And what I liked about Joyce, she had a warehouse full of food and appliances and things like that, that all you had to do is be a charity that registered with her, and you rock up and fill your van up and drive off. I said, that's what I want to do for New Zealand. And it's kind of like I'm doing now with all the rice we get and all the other things. You know, like the teachers' strike. On the day that the teachers were striking, Ormiston Packensave yelled out to me to come out. They got a good little bit of stock for me. They had 200 boxes of Roses chocolates. So we went around to every one of our schools on Thursday morning and put Roses chocolates in all the pigeonholes of all the teachers. So how did that make them feel? But we also have a school, Tikahanga, which is on the way to Port Waikato, which is the extremity of the New Zealand Presbyterian Social Workers in Schools area. And they've got 40 kids there and two teachers. So we look after them. They had a flood, lost all their library, lost all their sporting equipment. So we went to St. Kent's and we got all that stuff replaced. We bought uniforms for them. We gave them chocolates for every one of those children, and they wrapped them up in paper that they drew on and sent that to someone that they know that they love. And they all got a boxes of Roses chocolates from those kiddies. You know, and I'm like, wow. You know, really showing God's love. And the timing was perfect for the kids to come back, the teachers to come back to school, you know, and getting a Roses chocolate's good for your hips. Now I'm putting on kilos for all these teachers. But, you know, we start thinking, what more can we do? What would Jesus do? We had the kids come running up to us at Glen Innes School who couldn't swim because they couldn't afford swimming togs. You know, and you were thinking, if we can teach these kids to swim, maybe one life will be saved from drowning. You know, and you look at these kids, because I went to Kim at New World and said, we want to get some soup and all this for the kiddies. Can I have the veggies that you throw out? She says, Steve, that's for pigs. These are God's children. Go into my fruit department, veggie department, get the best that's there, and I'll write it off. You know, that is her attitude to God's children. And that must be our attitude, to constantly show God's love. So we went on Facebook and said, we need swimming togs. That Facebook entry of mine, which normally goes to 500 people, went to 88,000 people around the world. And Glen Innes started getting parcels from America, England, everywhere. The Glen Innes, because no one sends parcels nowadays, so the Glen Innes post office are ringing up the school and said, I don't know what you've done, but we've got hundreds of parcels here for you. You know, and that's just how it was. And we gave togs to Glen Taylor, St. Pius, Tama. You know, we're just handing out the togs. We've got goggles, we've got towels. Briscoe's rung up and gave us towels. And, you know, things just multiplied. But because our attitude was to show these children love, an unconditional love. And we didn't have, you know, we got told by a lot of people, you know, what's the makeup of the school? Well, South Auckland is half Maori, half Samoan. So they're both strong races. I don't know if we've got either here, but I'll say just pretend we haven't. They both claim the land is theirs. So they're fighting the whole time. So the only time they don't fight each other is when they're playing rugby and they're fighting the other team. And that's why at Randwick Park, they're the top South Auckland school for rugby, soccer, touch, you name it. They win it because they're just vicious. They want to win at all costs. I came over here to our schools here that are half Cook Island, half Tongan. And all they want to do is love. You know, they talk about Jesus all the time. There's no such thing as fighting for the land here. They just want to love everybody. So, you know, and they'll come to us and say, there's problems. Can you help? Can you ask your God for help? And I went, oh, yeah. You know, Presbyterian God, I don't know how if he does that way. And the principal said with the swimming togs, that was a school curriculum that the kids couldn't do. So when the media were ringing Jono up saying, what's all these things we're hearing about swimming togs? He just said, we've got a charity breakfast club that is formed when they can identify an obstacle to the school curriculum, their role is to remove that obstacle. I went, I like that. Yeah, and it's because he made it up. So we said, we'll take that. And so then I said, what else we got? And he goes, well, the girls won't run in the school athletics. I said, why not? So they need bras. Oh, so I rang up Bendon. I said, hey, I want, you know, a whole lot of bras. How much are you going to sell me them for? $20? Good. So then I went out to some ladies that I knew. Like, I'd ring you up and say, hey, I want $100. Yeah, I'm good for $100. So you end up getting $1,000. Well, last week we took 50 girls to Bendon. Well, you can imagine these girls never had a bra in their life, very conscious about anyone having anything to do with their body. And here we are throwing them into the changing room with two Bendon ladies and a teacher. And they just loved it. They came out of there, they felt $1 million. They loved more their Bendon bag that they had, you know, and they got their bras. And the next day at school, they go, Steve, no, you can't do that. You'll get me in trouble. You know, but that was what it did to those girls to now partake in the school sports. And we also saw that problem that the girls, again, girls, in years 7 and 8, were very subconscious because their uniforms that they've had for X number of years were tight as on them. So they were wearing all sorts of things to disguise what their polo shirt looked like. So we said, why don't we supply new polo shirts? The parents aren't going to buy uniforms for them in year 7 or year 8 because they're going to high school in year 9. So we went to BLK and said, hey, we want drip dry uniforms for these guys and girls in year 7. What will you charge me? And they said, $4,000 in the first year and then $2,000 every year thereafter to give every child 2 polo shirts. Let's do it. And all we thought that would come of that was that they would feel love and they would look smart. What we didn't know is the national average for decile 1 schools for attending school in their senior years is 66%. And that's what Glen Innes was getting, 60, 70%. We gave them these new polos, attendance went to 98%. English went through the roof, maths went through the roof, because they were attending school all the time. Feeling $1 million, they're a bit looser tops, and so they got those in year 7, and in year 8, if we found that the girls were blossoming more than we thought, we'll give them another size. So we wanted them to feel $1 million. But the things that we got out of that was huge. Again, just showing this love, we didn't have to understand how Cook Islands or Tongans think. We just got to show them love and unconditional love. A lot of them haven't got dads because they're in jail or they've departed, left. But you know, as males, we've got to be there every day for them. They've got to know that they can come up and say, hey, Steve, it's my birthday. And I go, oh, what kind of chocolate do you have? You know, oh, white. You know, and I'd go and get them. We'll usually get it as a credit, but if I have to go and buy it, I'd go and buy them a chocolate bar. Just so they knew that there's someone there, and they know that I'm a Christian. They know where I'm from. They know my heart, and they're the same. But they don't get those sort of things given to them. So we would always keep our word. We would be there for breakfast club. We would be there if they needed blankets, sheets. At the moment, we're supplying a lot of bedding, you know, so they keep warm. If the social worker said they need beds, we would get beds for them. So whatever their need was, we would find that. And that's one of the things that got me when I went to the Dream Centre. Matthew Barnett, who ran it, they took over a hospital in LA, and he had one quote, and I'll just read it. Success is obedience to your calling. I've called you to bless people, love them, heal them, help them, and serve them. And they had a one line that said, find a need and fill it. Find a hurt and heal it. And so we started putting that on the back of our t-shirts. And as anyone come up to us, and we can't say, oh, I'm sorry you don't go to Glen Innes, we can't help you. You know, we'd almost help somebody from Churchill Park. Probably. I've been a Presbyterian, we'd have a meeting. But, you know, that's kind of how our thoughts are. If we can find something to fix that need. And it's usually the social workers that come up to us with a real wacko, you know, oh, Steve, I've got this idea, you know. Especially with the Christmas store, we have to raise $20,000 to put on a Christmas event that we do on the 22nd of December. And, you know, a lot of organisations, that would be a negative. And this is our third year running the store, and we ran banquets for 2 years. And I kind of get a bit negative too, going, oh, and it's like every year we increase it. Now, I'm married to a Pentecostal, so I don't know if anyone here knows what that's like. But it's not a good thing. So when we had our first banquet, the second year, I was driving along the motorway with my lovely Pentecostal wife, and she said, why don't we double the numbers to the banquet next year? And I went, oh, get a life. You know, we just did 200. You know, what are you thinking? Oh, why don't we do 400, 600? I thought, but we can't, you know, Presbyterian. No, we can't really do that, dear. And then I got a phone call from the catering company that we use, who are a big catering company in the city. And they go, Steve, we've got bid vest here at the moment. How many are you going to do next year? And I went, and she, the old Pentecostals nudging me while I'm driving, because on speakerphone. And I went, 600? Yep, they'll supply all the veggies. And we'll do all, and they'll do all the leg, the lamb and turkeys as well. And here's, you can imagine old Brenda's hand, Yeshiba Daba Lavia. You know, like I went, oh, what? You know, the old Pentecostals trumped the Presbyterian again. You know, and because so every year she's done that to me. And like last year we had 150 families come to the banquet and about 600 kids. So this year we've got 200 families coming and 1,000 kids. But, you know, she could, ah. Oh. And I went, well, last year we raised 16,000 for the event. This year we did the budgets 20. And she goes, that's all right. You know, our Pentecostal God, he would supply it. I went, oh, frick you. So I sent an email out last Sunday to all those that donated last year. And I was kind of like, had my eyes closed, like, thank you for donating to us last year. We're looking at inviting more and more, and our donations are going to be 20,000. If you feel to give, I was trying to like almost saying don't give. You know, and within 7 days, I've raised $15,200 within 7 days of that group that gave 16,000 last year. And you've got to live with that woman I'm living with going, told ya. You know, so I'm trying to convince her that it's this Presbyterian God that's right behind the, you know, the Christmas store. But it's kind of like you're limiting God. You know, and all I feel that God, you know, a lot of, well, especially with Mary the Pentecostal, you know, God talks to them all the time. He doesn't talk to us Presbyterians too much. But the only thing I kind of hear him saying to me is to shut up. You know, I'm worried about this marginalizing. Shut up. You know, can I get the money this year? Shut up. You know, and I was like, okay, got that, you know. And so that's how Breakfast Club started. That's how we're going. This boss is, my eyebrow king. This was Philo. The names they give their kids. You know, you can imagine what mum was cooking at the time. What we did with the girls here, we decided to have a girls' day out. And we took them over to Takapuna. And they're all swimming in the Takapuna beach. You can imagine the locals ringing up the police. There's all these Samoans swimming in the water. Yeah, what are they doing in Takapuna? You know, this year, when I said at the school, what more can we do to our schools that we've got here? And Jono at Glen Innes said, fitness. We go to sports camp. And the kids are struggling on about day 3 or 4. Let's get them fit. So we lied, you know, we lied to the children. John said, we've got to lie to these kids. Do you know how to lie? And I said, I was in the police, John. You know, he said, well, you lie to them. So we had 100 and something kids at Mission Bay, and we pointed that way as St. Heliers. They had no idea. They haven't been to Mission Bay, these kids. Nor have they ever been to St. Heliers Bay. And they only live in Glen Innes. So we pointed roughly that way. You've got to run that way. It's about 3K. So they just ran in groups of 10. And we didn't tell them why or anything else. They ran, but we timed them all. So now, next Friday, this Friday coming, 31st, we know the times that they did. So we've shortened the run to 2.4K, which is the police qualifying time to enter the police. We've got 10 police turning up to run with the fastest 20 kids. So we know who those kids are. So the fastest 10 have got New World shirts on, and the second fastest 10 have got Hubbard shirts on. So they're going to go last. So we'll get all the other kids will run first and do their timings. But the most improved five kids getting brand new Shoe Clinic shoes. You know, they're getting about $2,000 worth of shoes. These kids could never get that. Shoe Clinic are making sure that every kid that runs has got running shoes. They get those return shoes on 30-day return, no questions asked. We've got 200 of those. So every kid's going to get that. So we've got the police doing a barbecue at the end. We've got police running with the fastest kids. We've got Auckland Blues runners running with the kids. We've got Simon O'Connor, the local MP, conning him into running with the kids, you know. This, you know, and when we did the first run along the waterfront, again, I got a mate that sits at opposite Coe Cafe. He's there, a good friend of mine, and he's got to halfway, because it's dead on halfway for the 2.4K. He loves it there. He says, mate, all the women are lycra. Can I have it again? And he's a guy, he's 66. You know, it's not good for his heart. You know, he says, I love it. I want to keep it again. Give me the job at the Coe Cafe. You know, but I need you to show the kids the sign. Stop staring across the road, you know. So, but you know, we got him there. We got there's a guy called Sione Lewaki that died, All Black number 8. His brother's Epalahami. He's at the Coe Yacht Club with a water pistol, wetting every kid. And I went, oh no, a Tongan with a gun. I can see the police turning up there, you know. But he's there, and we've got a big thing of water for him, and he's got this pistol to wet every kid that comes past. And he takes the kids at the end. They're going to do touch rugby. You know, he wants to get there and give back to the kids. You know, so the kids just know that there's love, you know, that we're trying to do all these things for them. You know, every child that runs who's not getting the Hubbards and the New World shirts have got I Love GI shirts from creative communities. You know, so they're all feeling this love that someone out there, and you can see how their schoolwork improves. Everything about things have improved, all because God's love. And now Glenn Taylor said, well, now you've got the running sorted out. Next year, we want to be in the run as well. So I'm going, oh, no, we're going to probably have to get a council permit now. You know, to have 200 kids running along the waterfront, I can imagine the little hoo-ha we might get if we don't get a permit. So now we're going to have to step up and do things a bit different. So coming to the end of my... When I started thinking, when you're about my age, you start thinking of songs that got love in. And John Lennon wrote All You Need Is Love in seven, oh, I don't know when it was, way back in the day. And I started singing that song while I was driving around, that all we need is love to these kids. You know, it's got to keep constantly showing them love. And kind of when they ask you for something wacko, do it. One kid made the Auckland Year 8 rugby team or something. And he goes, oh, Steve, can I have pizzas from my whole class? Well, they're only $5 a pizza at Domino's. So I had to get 6 or 7 pizzas or something. And I just rocked up with pizzas. But I mean, you can see what that does to them when they're cheeky and ask you for something, but you go and get it. You know, and it's not hard to ring up a mate and say, hey, mate, you got $35 on you? You know, I got to get all these pizzas. So that was one thing there. And then I started doing a bit of research. And as I'm just winding down, Joe Cocker, and this is him way back in the Woodstock days, so you'd have to be in your 70s now to remember. And if you can remember Woodstock, you obviously weren't there. It's like, don't they say in the 60s, if you can remember the 60s, you weren't there. But Joe, he sang this song. But it was a song that was written by Billy Preston in 1974. I think there are some rumours out that the Beach Boys also helped write it. But Billy Preston wrote the song, and when Joe sang it, Joe mainly sang that first verse. And we're going to have a clip in a minute of him singing both verses. And when you hear the words, you can almost hear God talking to the children. You know, you are so beautiful to me. Everything I hope for, everything I need. a guiding light that shines in the night, heaven's gift to me. And you know, when you hear those words of Joe Cocker, and I hope that you'll leave here singing that when you're in the car, you know, and thinking that's how we should treat the girl, the kids, the boys, the girls out there in the community, that's what Jesus and God think of the children. And we shouldn't be thinking any different at all. Don't care if the dad's an axe murderer or whatever dad does. Yeah, and that's the flack I get. You know, how come mum's got seven kids? Well, I don't know. I don't really want to ask mum why she's got seven. Most of the time it's comfort because dad's in jail, he went to jail seven times, and every time he came out, she got pregnant. You know, but that's not the children's fault. You know, we've got to love those children as God would love them. And I'm just going to see whether we can crank up this song. And just look at the words. And that's my message for today.